You're listening to the Diary Discoveries podcast, brought to you by sallysdiaries.com. Now here's your hosts, Sally Ivey and Jeff Richards.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Diary Discoveries. And this episode is going to be one of our shorter versions because we didn't use an actual diary to produce this one.
No, you're right. And most of the things that are in my collection are diaries, of course. But when you're searching for diaries, you come up with other things. And I found some wonderful detective hotel slips from the 1930s and started researching and reading them and found an amazing story.
Why don't you tell people how you did come across these?
Well, when I'm usually searching for diaries, a lot of it is, of course, on eBay and other, you know, auction sites. I don't just put in the word diaries or journal. I think the main thing I use is handwritten. So I'm very interested in anything that's vintage and handwritten. And these things came up as handwritten hotel detective slips.
And from them, there is a story.
There really is. When I research something, it's good to try to get an idea of what that era is like, you know, depending on when the diary was written, when these hotel slips were written, and so on and so forth. And so this era is 1933, and we thought we'd give you a little idea of what life was like in the 1930s.
Well, how about rent for a house for a month? $18.
$18. How about to buy one was $5,000.
Yeah, and the average laborer's wage was $20 per week. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is when the Great Depression was going on. It was considered the worst year of the Depression.
It was. It started in 1929 and went several years. And I would say this is, if I'm drawn to an era, it's this era, the year of the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl, the gangsters. There was a lot going on in the 1930s.
Some of those gangsters, Al Capone, John Dillinger, Babyface Nelson,
Pretty Boy Floyd, all of those names. In fact, not to give too much of a teaser, but we will be podcasting on a very fun diary in the future, and it has to do a little bit with this era of gangsters. So,
Coming up.
I'm anxious to share that one.
Well, on the positive side of things, I mean, we have all these negative Dust Bowl and people out of work with the Depression and this and that, but chocolate chip cookie was invented.
It was invented.
Thank goodness.
And the game Monopoly, we found out. The very first drive-in theater was also. So it was quite the year, you know. Think about it. You know, 1 in 3 Americans were out of work. A lot of them moved to the Midwest and were caught up in the Dust Bowl. Gangsters were roaming the streets.
Well, in overseas, Adolf Hitler had been appointed Chancellor of Germany, and that was really the beginning of when things really started to go bad in Germany. So that was happening. Mm-hmm. Our story takes place at the Hotel Gibson in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes, this was a very large hotel that was built in 1849. And it was funny because when I started studying the history of this hotel, it said it was closed a year later because it was too far out in the country. So it closed in 1850. And then it had 4 more times. It was rebuilt, and 2 of them were because of fire until this last one. And I think it was finally torn down in 1973, I think we looked at. But it was a thriving hotel, a large hotel, when our detective, who's Robert James Kenny, is the detective's name. And he had a private detective agency, actually, there in Cincinnati. But at the time we found these detective hotel slips, he was working there at the Gibson.
So part of his job was to take care of people that came into the hotel that were causing trouble, but he also had other duties. And so there's 60 of these detective slips in the collection, and Boy, they weren't easy to read, were they?
No, they weren't. You know, he almost like a doctor slips. He had quite the, you know, scribble as far as writing. He also would put the time that things happened, the date that they happened, and what he would find that went on in some of these rooms.
Yeah, well, with everything going on out in the world, it seemed like these detective slips primarily were keeping people from having sex. I think that's boils right down to
actually,
it.
Actually, you're right. You're right. Or the wrong sex? I don't know. I don't know. There were just things that they would allow in the hotel and things they wouldn't. And he was the one that stopped the things that they wouldn't allow.
Right. Well, a lot of them said we found the door locked and we could hear a woman's voice on the inside. So they would know if somebody registered as a single, they could tell if they had guests up in their room. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, if it was a lady and it was a single gentleman, they would knock on the door and find out what was going on.
But he never mentioned the word sex in these.
No, he didn't.
He said they were having a party. And at first I thought, oh, they're having a party and they're being too loud. But then I got, you know,
educated
from Mr. Detective Kenny's notes. And I started realizing that having a party was having sex.
Yeah. So at this point, we'll read a couple of them to you.
And, let's do.
But before we read some of the call slips, we're going to talk about Sally's website again, because she's been putting photographs of some of these items. Like, there'll be photographs of the call slips and some of the hotel itself on sallysdiaries.com. And when we tell you that that's available, we don't want you to be afraid that we're trying to get you to buy stuff. There's nothing on her website that's for sale. It's strictly for reference. So if you go there, you can find the podcast extra page and you can see photographs of these things that we're talking about.
And then we also put a subscribe button there too.
Right, right. And that if you do want to subscribe to our podcast through her website, we'll just collect your email to send you out a notice that there's a new episode. We're not going to do anything with those email addresses except that it'll be very discreet and you don't have to worry about us giving them away to anybody else. So there's that.
There's that. Now we're going back into the 1930s. So this is what was going on April 30th, 1933, at the Gibson Hotel. This happened in room 194. Guest's name, Mr. and Mrs. Rydberg. Dr. Rydberg went to the room alone. A little later, his wife came in, received a call that somebody was fighting. When I entered, found Mrs. Rydberg on the floor and doctor on top of her, striking each other. Separated them, but they still continued the battle, she throwing her shoes or anything loose at him. Both were calling each other names, and both had small cuts and bruises as a result of their skirmish. Table was overturned, and the room was in disorder. During her rage, she threw a typewriter to the floor, ruining it. Doc had accused her of being out drinking, which started the melee. She finally went to her mother's home with her brother, and Doc went home by himself. Nothing destroyed but the typewriter.
Well, then you went a little step further with this Dr. Rydberg. You looked his name up and associated with Gibson Hotel?
I did, and I found out that Dr. Rydberg was actually the hotel masseuse. And so he worked there and I guess stayed there in one of the rooms. And I also found out that 2 years later, he and his wife divorced and he married a much younger woman. And this woman's brother was owned a racetrack there in Cincinnati. And then 3 months after the wedding to this younger woman at 47 years old, the doctor passed away.
I wonder what killed him.
I don't know. Interesting story, though, to say the least. This just shows you. And this is the, I call it the rabbit hole, we both do, that you go down sometimes when you're researching. Every name that he mentions, I started looking up on some of the search engines, and it was a lot of fun. And this is how I found Dr. Rydberg.
Well, this one got my interest because being a retired firefighter, but on January 23rd, in room 1070, a guest by the name of Walter H. Villard went to sleep and cigarette dropped on bed and set same on fire, damaging mattress and bed and all things and carpet. Fire was put out with our calling fire department. Damage, $50. So a fire at that time on the 10th floor, I'm guessing.
Right. And with what kind of equipment, you know, as far as they didn't have those huge ladder trucks. Well, maybe they did. I don't know, in 1933.
Well, it would have been a job, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And surprising that that didn't burn down the hotel.
For the third time.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was one of his little call slips.
Mm-hmm. Then on January 25th, room number 543, the guest's name was R.R. Cox, and he was from Lowe, Kentucky. Mr. Cox took woman to the room with him, locked the door. We told Mr. Cox that woman was a notorious character whom he did not know. Had her leave hotel immediately. Woman's name, Miss Bowman.
Miss Bowman.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I saw her name in another slip.
So she was at the hotel.
Yeah, she could frequented have been a, possibly. Maybe she did more mm-hmm. than once.
More than once.
I don't know.
Notorious character.
Notorious. February 11th. Room number 979, the guest's name was Bill Ryan. Mr. Ryan registered in 979. I was making my rounds and I heard a woman's voice in the room and door was locked. I called Mr. Curry and we knocked on door and had to throw lock and found a woman in the room. And from the appearance of them, we asked them to check out at once.
From the appearance of them.
Like, could they have been covered in feathers or something? I mean, what on earth?
Check out.
Get yeah, out. You too. Out.
That's right. From the appearance of them. Oh, goodness. February 17th, room number 603. Guest's name, Mrs. M. Navarro from Daytona Beach, Florida. This lady checked into the hotel and asked the bellman, Luke, to send Bill Captain to the room. I sent Mr. Niehaus to see Mrs. Navarro, and she asked Mr. Niehaus to send some boyfriends up to the room. I then went to the room with Mr. Niehaus and told her to check as she was in the wrong hotel, or told her to check out as she was in the wrong hotel for that. She left right away.
Yeah, people were compliant.
She didn't say send a boyfriend. She said send boyfriends.
Boyfriends.
Up to the room.
Yeah. Well,
rather
interesting.
Bold.
Yeah, these things that they didn't tolerate in the hotel.
No.
Because there were other ones. Like, one was about these guys that broke into the pay toilet.
Oh, yes.
And took all the money.
And took all the change out of the pay toilets.
I think they got $1.35,
yeah,
is what he said.
I think so, too.
But they let him go.
Yeah.
He said, I'm giving these guys a second chance.
And he talked about, you know, people, you know, lost items as far as he had, or stolen items, and fights in the room, and noise. So it just wasn't the ones we're reading, but there was a lot going on in that hotel at the time.
Yeah, well, on February 25th, there were two rooms, number 405 and 486. The guest's name, Mrs. Betty Aaliyah, Miss Lyons of Indianapolis. I found Mrs. Aaliyah in room 486 with a man named H. Thompson from Tampa, Florida. Door locked, both scantily attired. Went to 405 and found Mrs. Lyons had man in room, door locked, both scantily attired. Check both of them out of hotel. Bill paid. Man.
A lot going on.
You will not do that in this hotel.
No, you
get out. Pay the bill.
But pay your bill first. You don't even get to spend the night. April 4th, room number 255. Guest's name, R.T. Lyle of Lowe, Kentucky. Well, there's Lowe, Kentucky again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Two must different have
been
guys.
Close.
Yeah. Mr. Lyle registered in single, had been out drinking and took a woman to room with him. Found woman under the bed when we entered, had him dismiss her. She gave name as Opal Hayes of Cincinnati.
If there's any relatives of Miss Hayes out there, yeah, we're sorry.
Yeah.
She was found under the bed.
She was found under the bed.
And alive.
And
so
alive.
That's good. Because sometimes people found under beds are not alive. Well, on May 3rd, room number 752, the guest's name was W. Turner from Chicago, Illinois. Mr. Turner took woman to room with him who was notorious in every respect, called Mr. Turner outside and spoke to him regarding woman, but he insisted she was his guest regardless. We finally convinced him about her, and he escorted her out in a few moments. Woman was Eunice Johnson, etc., a notorious character.
In every respect.
In every respect.
In every respect. What I find very interesting is that they had to convince him that she was a notorious woman.
Well, it's like they said, sir, do you know who you're with? Because we know her.
We know her. Yes. And you know, we laugh because how times are so different, but yet they aren't in a way. And it's rather refreshing to get diaries and just other bits and pieces of history that you can read. And it just makes for a fun read.
It does. And again, for relatives of Eunice Johnson, sorry. If you're out there.
If you're out there.
Well, now we have an article that was written up in the paper about our detective. And so I'll read that next.
This is a great article.
So this article is from the Cincinnati Inquirer, dated September 6th, 1937. And it's titled, Hotel Detective Busy. Departing hotel guests leave behind them everything from a bull fiddle to a glass eye. And it's the house detective's job to see to it that the owner of the fiddle doesn't get the glass eye and vice versa, according to Robert Kenny, chief house detective of the Hotel Gibson. Kenny was in a reminiscent mood last night as he recalled the thousands of articles that have been found and returned to owners in the 7 years he has been with the hotel. A Woodward High School musician left the bull fiddle several years ago. Kenny doesn't know the why or the wherefore, but he knows that the owner had it back the next day. The glass eye has Kenny stumped. It was left on a table at the hotel in May. Kenny still has it in his files. A light brown left eye. It apparently is of excellent craftsmanship. That one was something we were really curious about.
How do you leave your glass eye?
Yeah, maybe he was an eye salesman.
Could have been.
We have a fine model here, this left brown eye. Yep. Oh, I don't have it. I mean, very curious.
But okay. I have a blue one if you want one.
Yeah. back to the article. Mm-hmm. Umbrellas, pocketbooks, and wallets, slippers, hats, and pajamas are articles left most frequently by guests, Kenny said. Every rainy day brings about a dozen umbrella problems to straighten out. In a year, Kenny believes he'll return more than $1,000 in lost cash. His biggest wallet found stuffed inside a freshly laundered shirt of an absent-minded guest who insisted he had been robbed contained $500, he said. Last week, Kenny and his aide, Joseph Joachim, cleaned up a hat mystery, which involved a prominent physician and leading businessman who had been wearing the wrong hats for several days. I'm glad they got to the bottom of that one.
I am.
Each day, a watch or a wallet is found under a pillow when rooms are cleaned by maids. Then the process of finding the owner and returning the property gets underway with Kenny in charge. The hotel has a storeroom with bins of lost and found articles waiting clearance. Some of the things noted yesterday on which Kenny has correspondence with owners: a portable typewriter, a pair of riding boots, a cowbell, a camera, a child's chair with a hole in the center, two small radios, four raincoats, three top coats, umbrellas, canes, pajamas, a partridge in a pear tree, slippers, lotions, a briefcase, a baton, sunglasses, keys, pipes, cigars, and two violin bows. The return of false teeth to owners is no joke to Kenny. He said his average of contented chewers a year runs between 15 and 20 persons who hurry to remote parts to dine without being fully prepared to do so.
Contented chewers.
Yeah. This is a different age of journalism.
It's a different age, and one I miss.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because nowadays it's so different.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that they had time to write about things like this.
It's wonderful.
And you leave without your teeth. How far do you get before you think, you sound funny?
Yeah. And I'm not a contented chewer.
Not content at all. Not one bit. One of Kenny's best pieces of quick return of lost articles involved 6 pints of whiskey. They were brought into the hotel by a guest who stuffed them into a bureau drawer before going out to make his morning sales calls. In the afternoon, he reported the loss. He said a maid had been in the room when he was depositing the bottles. Kenny, checking the maid schedule, found that a maid had been in a room, like the guests, on a floor directly beneath the man's room. Going to this room, Kenny opened the bureau drawer, and there were the bottles. The man was no little put out to learn that he had hopped off an elevator on the wrong floor, dumped his refreshments, then hurried away.
Wow.
So another case closed.
You know, I find, as I was listening to this, I also was realizing he was a good guy, Kenny, because Great Depression, the repeal of Prohibition, you know, you've got alcohol, you've got money that's found in shirt pockets. He could have easily taken all that stuff, and he didn't, you know. He was a good detective and a good man.
Yeah, he was, and we have something to tell you a little bit about him.
So I wanted to tell you just a tiny bit more about our detective Kenny. It was Robert James Kenny, and he was born in Ohio in 1894, and that makes him only 39 years old when he was working with the Gibson Hotel. He ended up marrying Margaret Mance, and then they had three sons, which was Harry, William, and then Robert Jr., and all three sons fought during World War II. So I thought that was very interesting. And then he passed away on March 13th, 1949. So he wasn't that old, actually, when he passed away. But we're very happy somebody decided to keep these hotel slips because we've sure enjoyed them.
Yeah, we hope you did too. Kind of an interesting little take on things.
And speaking of interesting, especially I'm very excited about one of our next trips that we're going to be taking. It's going to be to Idaho. I have a very interesting diary of a man who lived in a small mining town, I believe it was, in Idaho. And it's a ghost town now. And we're taking a road trip, aren't we, Jeff?
Yeah, we're going to try to find it. If whatever's left of it.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be very exciting, and we'll be sharing that within the next few weeks.
Yeah, and we have another one coming too, as far as a prominent family from California that hopefully you'll find as interesting as we did.
Yeah, we were going to make that a short, but the more we started diving into this history of this family, the more we realized, oh my goodness, I don't think it's going to fit in a short. It's just, there's just too much to this family. Four boys and one girl, or, yeah. So,
yeah.
Join us next time.
Thank you for listening.
For more information about Sally and her diaries, go to sallysdiaries.com.